More of Lake Effect now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Have you ever looked at a painting in an art gallery and wished that you could become part of the world the artist created? Certainly, it'd be nice to spend some time in Claude Monet's world, and it would be an adventure to make your way through an M.C. Escher drawing. Matt and Emily Calder can actually do that. Well, actually is kind of a strong word since they are both fictional characters, but they're the heroes of Hollow Earth, the new fantasy adventure novel for young adults by Milwaukee writer Carol Barrowman and her brother John Barrowman. John is better known for his acting work, including his role as Captain Jack Harkness that originated on the BBC series Doctor Who and was spun off to the series Torchwood. Both Barrowmans were in Milwaukee recently for a reading at Alverno College, where Carol also teaches, and they were kind enough to stop by the Lake Effect studio. Great to meet you. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So you write at the end of this book, and this is not a spoiler alert, about the creation myth of the book, if you will, that it kind of popped into your heads en route from London to Cardiff. How fully formed was it, and how did the finished version square with the one that was inspired by the traffic going by?
Well, the the traffic going by. I mean, we were driving a Range Rover at the time, and the Range Rover is in the book. That's what the grandfather drives, because that was the car I was driving at the time. But yes, the book was conceived, if you want to think of it that way, when we were on a trip from London to Cardiff. And I was probably filming or doing something at the moment in Cardiff with either to do with Torchwood or Doctor Who, one of the two. Probably more so Torchwood. And or I've probably got it completely wrong.
And we were eating lots of sweets.
We were eating
lots of candy.
And we were driving, and we usually tape all the conversations we have in the car. I can't remember who actually asked the question, but the question was, what would your superpower be if you had a superpower? So then we kept talking about it and, you know, having done flying, and we decided that then having the power to draw and create art or bring art to life or put yourself inside a painting or a drawing, that was the power. I'm not kidding you. By the time we got to Cardiff, 2.5 hours later, we had pretty much mapped this book out.
Yeah. We had pretty much outlined it. And the more – we would get more and more excited when we thought of all the little things we could do, because – one of the things that we loved when we were kids were Enid Blyton's series. I know there's not a lot of American readers that probably are familiar with her, but we loved Enid Blyton. We loved a lot of adventure stories, The Secret Seven and
Famous Five.
And so we knew we wanted a little cadre of kids who solved a lot of problems and mysteries and so on. And so by the time we got to the end of the drive, we had definitely formed the book, and we had Zach as our first character.
Yes. It wasn't Matt and Em. It was Zach who we had talked about, that we wanted to have a character who had his issues were slightly different than the others, and we decided to make him deaf because the challenge was for Carol to create a deaf character that at first when you met him, you didn't realize that he was.
Yeah, in fact, one of the things that we did was we tried to figure out if there had been any other books where there was a deaf character, where the deaf character wasn't the point of view. In other words, you weren't first-person point of view.
I want to virtually roll the tape back just a minute, because you said something that's interesting.
By the way, we talk an awful lot, and you
just
have
need to cut
us
in.
Off.
You're just going to have to cut right in.
Why do you normally record conversations in the car between the two of you?
This is actually our fourth book together, and it's our first children's novel. And we learned very quickly that sometimes we have the best moments and the best things that could be written down in car conversations where our guard's down, there's no one else listening, and so on. So we have actually just gotten the habit, if we think we're going into one of those moments where we may have a conversation that other people might be interested in, although my children think no one is ever interested in anything else we have to say.
We've still got all of the recordings. And actually, moments, there's one recording where we start, and then within 20 seconds into it, I'm not kidding you, it's about 18 minutes of just laughter.
Oh, I know.
We're crying. We said we have to keep it. But there's sometimes when we talk about stuff, memories come up, or you recall things that you think, oh, and I know this from writing my concert tours and producing those, that if I want to talk about a story, I immediately have to notate it, because if I think, well, I'll think about it later, You never do. You never remember.
Well, and also he's getting pretty old. And,
yeah. Remember, you know, who's the older one.
The brain
one.
Is falling apart. Sorry.
You have this brother and sister relationship. You are not twins like Matt and Em, but
no. How
much of that relationship kind of comes out in the relationship between the brother and sister in this book?
I think one of the things we really tried to do in this book was to make them feel like real brother and sister. And sort of the taunting and some teasing, but the immediate defense of the other when that was necessary. And I think one of the best pieces of criticism we had about the book was when someone said to us, "This feels like a real boy and girl." And that meant a lot because we didn't want it to be so much like us that you might not, if you're a reader and you're 12, you want to sort of see yourself in one of the kids too. And we wanted to make sure that would happen.
Well, and I think one of the other things you did successfully is they're obviously the same age, but the same age boy and girl at that stage are two different, completely different points of development.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's also Carol, you know, knowing that with how we grew up, but also Carol has two kids of her own, and Claire and Turner. And, Claire was a twin, and they lost the Anne when, at birth. But so Carol's, you know, as we all have, Scott and I have watched Claire and Turner grow up also. So we know there's that different development stages and how it works. And that's more so Carol grabbed that from a mom's point of view. I mean, it's something that I have only experienced as an uncle, but she had it on an everyday basis. So,
well, and I think the whole art aspect of the book and the fact that these twins can move in and out of art and that they can make their imaginations are, in a sense, their superpower. They're also at puberty, too. And there's so.
Which is its own superpower.
Absolutely. You've been to Longfellow Middle School, I'm sure. Yeah. So they're really at an amazing sort of watershed moment in their lives. And here they are suddenly figuring out that they are part of this ancient tradition of artists who can bring their art to life. And so it made sense for us to make them be this age, right at the cusp of young adulthood, but yet still embracing childhood in a way that even the adults who are reading this, I hope, could recognize that.
The book could have been cutesy, but we didn't. And kids don't want cutesy nowadays. They want to be scared. They want to be hanging off the edge of their seat or their bed when they're reading the stuff. So, it's we could have been very easy and done cutesy, but we decided not to.
Well, and we haven't really – we've set up some of the characters in the book, but we haven't really set up what's going on here. The book involves and I haven't said this out loud, so you might have to correct me – Animare?
Yes, yep. Very good.
Very good.
It involves Animare, Guardians, and lurking in the background something called the Hollow Earth Society. Give us the background on all of these groups and where our heroes fit into it.
Well, Animare are people – a group of people who can bring artwork or their art or other art to life, okay? Just use that in the blunt terms. Matt and Em are the Animari who are protected by a group of people. Their grandfather happens to be one of them who protects them.
And that would be the Guardians.
That's correct. So, yeah, the Guardians protect the Animari. And the whole thing is, kind of in a nutshell, it's they open up the can of worms when in the first the second chapter when they do something at the National Gallery and their mother says to them, you have no idea what you have just done. Then they have to flee London, go up to northern Scotland to be protected by their grandfather, and because they have then opened up the can of worms, which would be
Hollow Earth, or the search for Hollow Earth anyway. The part that I really enjoy the most and I had most fun writing is the book goes back and forth between current day and a young scribe, Solon, who works at a monastery in these two islands. And Solon is actually the one who is working with a book of beasts, a bestiary, an illustrated manuscript. And that is tied to the myth of Hollow Earth. And Hollow Earth is a place where all the mythical monsters and beasts of the imagination have been trapped. And they're trapped there because the world is moving forward into civilization. It's moving forward to enlightenment and magic is dissipating and religion is taking over more dominance. And so Hollow Earth has trapped all the beasts, the griffins and all of those kinds of things. And the children may or may not be the key to the opening of that Hollow Earth.
And that's why they're sought after.
Yes.
Well, and meanwhile, through this whole period, you also kind of have Matt and Em are really learning about, as any 12-year-old, they're right. learning about who they are and how they fit in the world.
Correct. And yes. And that's also when they realize that they have these – and it's funny because as you read it, the beginning, you realize they actually do know that they can do something very different from other children, but they're not sure why they can do it. And the process of learning is when they go up to the island Ochinmon off the coast of Scotland, which is a real island, but we've put a fictional name with it. And they go up there, and it's their grandfather and the others who are there who help them home in on their powers.
Yeah. So I'm curious about writing fantasy because on one hand, it seems like it'd be a luxury to write in a genre where basically you can make anything happen. But on the other hand, anything is a pretty wide net to cast. Do you have to draw the line between anything happening and, you know, anything happening within reason?
Well, it goes along with why we picked the kids to be at this point in their experience and in their life. There's rules. There's rules in this world, in this fantasy world. And I think almost any of the fantasy novels that I've read and liked, there are boundaries. And I think as a writer, you structure those boundaries and then you figure out ways when it's possible for them to break them and when it's possible for them not to break them. So, for example, by the time you get to the end of Hollow Earth, I think we've established and set up the five rules of being an Animary. For example, you cannot bring a person back to life. And obviously, as the writers, we decided that right away because that opens up a book that didn't achieve what we would hope to achieve. I mean, you just can't bring someone back to life who dies. And mm-hmm. and so we did not want to put the kids in that situation. There's certain other rules that involve the guardians. For example, if an artist loses control of his or her power, they are bound in a painting. And it's usually a painting of that they have created. But we also thought, I didn't want them to think that kids could be bound in a painting because that's just too scary and it would
– And work. A little creepy.
And a little creepy. And would kind of work against the wonderful message about art that I hope the book carries. So right away you learn the rule, children cannot be bound. Their imagination should and could and cannot be bound. So I think establishing those rules helped.
And it also helps differentiate it, frankly, from Torchwood.
Indeed.
Well, and we wanted to do that because although, you know, I'm not saying it for an ego reason, but it's just real. You know, a lot of people when they're buying the book, you know, not because it's just also a great book, but they're also buying it because of the reputation of, you know, myself and that Carol have with the past books, but also with my television career. So it's, you know, we wanted to go away as far as possible to that so that there couldn't be a comparison made. And also, all I'll say is there's certain things that happen in the second book, Bone Quill, which reflect on my past.
A little more so.
A little more so. But, you know, the first book, we wanted to establish our own world, our own characters. And I think it's fantastic that the Torchwood fans and Doctor Who fans have jumped on board with this book because they are the genre. They know the genre. They are the readers. And in fact, you know, for a lot of people listening, you'll be thinking, oh, it's a children's book. The amount of adults who have been, you know, and you know, who have loved this book and are loving it in the UK is just amazing. And it's something, again, that you can share with your kids. So, you know, it is a step away from Torchwood and Doctor Who, but it's also something that, you know, we're not unaware.
No, and when we were kids, though, we were huge fantasy fans too. Lion Witch in the Wardrobe, that whole series we just loved.
Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator was one of the first books I bought in those Scholastic book things yeah. that they used to bring in. Those
they
pamphlets.
Still do.
They do.
Yes,
and you mark off what you want. And I used to, you know, and I remember reading it and thinking, oh, that would be amazing. And that, you know, that was a fantastic book.
Do you think as people who have written books for adults, is there something different about the pacing when you're writing for kids?
Yes. This was way harder to do, much, much harder to do because one of the things I did very early on, and I think someone told John and I to do this, but since I was writing, I paid much more attention to it. They said, find an ideal reader. Find the child that you really want to write this book for, and have that child in your head. Now, my kids are grown, so I imagined a couple of nephews and a niece and some friends who have younger kids. And I kept every now and then reminding myself that would they like this? Would they not like it? Pacing was the hardest thing because kids don't really care about the color of the curtains that much. They don't really care about the effect of, you know, the moonlight on the water.
But you don't want to not
but
do justice to the
– right. But no, so there
but
are,
you have to find a way to do justice to that
and,
quickly.
Yeah, and there are some moments in there where I really do think you have a beautiful sense of the Scottish Islands, but I think it's written in a way that that any child would think, oh, that would be kind of cool. I'd like to go there without slowing down the story.
I also wonder if there is something similar in the pacing of a book like this, not to read too much into the TV, the nexus between TV and books.
Well, of course,
yeah, there is something TV
that
feeling.
That was the
about,
one thing John did
that
say
was
to me.
The one thing I said right off the bat before we handed everything over and she went away, I said, you must write this as if it is a TV show or a movie because we have to – you know, with great editing points, with, you know, commercial breaks, I'm being facetious, but my production company, Barrowman Barker Productions in the UK, we already have sold the TV rights off to another independent. I shouldn't say Barrowman Barker have sold it off. The rights have been bought. Barrowman Barker are co-producers in it because obviously if the script goes into development, Carol will be, head of script. You know,
he doesn't want to let me have a part in the show.
She's not a good enough actress. There's a part in it that we wrote specifically because, you know, also, and let's be honest about this, when we went to the TV company after they read the first book, they said, you know, because I was going to be something different in the book if we were going to go to TV. But the TV, you know, this company said, we really would like more involvement if you're going to be in it, John. So we looked at developing the character. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but we looked at developing him even more, you know, and
in the second book in particular.
So, yeah, that was in mind. And to be honest with you, I'd be stupid as a businessman if that wasn't in part of my mind for that.
These books have been a big hit in the UK. They've just come out in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Is the U.S. still the great unknown in terms of how this is going to do?
I'm not sure it's a great unknown, but it's certainly a little bit unknown. We're just coming off a book tour, and the reception has been amazing. The crowds that have showed up have been wonderful, and the best thing is when you get some kids writing to you and saying, I really like this. When's the next one? And to me, that's the best gratification of all. So I hope it does really well here because I'd like to continue to tell stories about these kids and about their art.
Yeah, I mean, that. Having said what I just said about the TV show and being a businessman, part of the reason that we wrote the book was not, I mean, if I can be so blunt in saying that we didn't think about the financial gain when we were writing it. It's still, you know, not jumping out at us with dollar signs or pound signs.
I haven't quit my day job at Alverno yet.
and I haven't quit mine either. We did it because of the love of what we do and we wanted to tell these stories. So if people are buying it, which they are, which we are totally appreciative of, that is that's proving to be icing on the cake in that term.
So it all started with this conversation that took place in the car between London and Cardiff. And if I remembered the story you were telling correctly, your superpower was animation, bringing animation to life. What was yours?
Actually, we ended up agreeing with each other about our superpowers. We both would like to fly.
Yeah. I mean, that was the first one right off the bat. I would love to fly. Or the other one that I remember saying was I'd like to hold my breath for have an infinite.
You could swim underwater, basically.
Swim underwater, basically, without breathing. Because actually, we talked about, because we've also just released a Torchwood novel in the UK called Exodus Code, which is doing very well over there. It's a complete Captain Jack story to continue the life of Captain Jack while the show's kind of in limbo at the moment. But I said to I said Jack should develop something where he can hold his breath for an exceptionally amount of time. And then she said to me, do you forget that you can't die? So it doesn't matter. And I'm like, oh, yeah, duh.
Well, John Barrowman, Carol Barrowman, thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for having us.
John and Carol Barrowman are brother and sister. They're the authors of the young adult adventure novel called Hollow Earth, which is just out in the United States. Carol lives in Wauwatosa and teaches English at Alverno College. John lives in the UK. He is known for his acting work, including stage roles, and his television role as Captain Jack Harkness on Doctor Who and Torchwood. There is even more of our conversation at WUWM.com/Lake Effect. And this rather dramatic music from Torchwood takes us to the end of today's show. I'm Mitch Teich. So glad you could listen today, and I sure hope you can be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect from WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh Air is next. It's 11 o'clock.